And I'd like to begin with a memory I have connected to this place. So when Baba Amte, the founder of Anandavan and Somnath, was still alive, every year when we came back from Somnath, from the meditation retreat, we would go and see him with the group. And he was always very interested in our experience here, partly because he really loved this place and he was no longer strong enough to make the journey himself. And primarily, I think, because he was very interested in the fact that we were doing this here, that we were spending a week or 10 days here in silence, just offering ourselves to this inner path. And I think it was the last time, when he was still well enough to actually speak with us, that he said he wanted to share something with us. And he told us about this tree that he had once seen. And he said it was a tree that had very, very special roots. They didn't grow just straight down into the ground. They grew outwards and back in, creating a kind of cave, quite a big cave. And he said that in this cave, it was so silent and so safe and so peaceful that the wild animals would come there and spend time. And then he said to us, and that is what meditation is. It's creating that space within ourselves. It's creating a space that's so quiet and safe, so silent and secret, that the wild animals can come and rest there. So just that image of creating that space within ourselves, a place where the wild animals can come and rest. Our own wild animals, but also not just our own. A place that's safe for everyone, for everything, that can hold everything. And it's a place that we are cultivating knowingly or not knowingly as we sit or lie here through the days. It just is something that happens. And for me, this image of Baba is one of the most beautiful images that I've ever heard of what meditation creates, what meditation is. And sometimes in the teachings, it's this kind of quality is called bodhicitta, or awakened heart. So bodhicitta is made up of two words. Bodhi means awake, free from confused mind. And citta is a word which means both heart and mind. And another way that bodhicitta is described is a basic human wisdom that can drive away the sorrows of the world. A basic human wisdom that can drive away the sorrows of the world. This meditation cave within us, where the wild creatures can come and rest, can find safety, can find care. And like the tree with its roots, it's not something that we need to create. It's something that we're more uncovering. Something that's already there. Often the image that's used is, it's like the sky that's there even when the clouds are covering the sky. It's like the sun that's still there in the universe even when it's night here. It's always there, it's always present. And through our lives we have experiences of this cloudless sky. The presence of the sun in the universe. Sometimes it can be in our natural movement towards another's suffering. Just that very natural impulse to care, to help, to give. Just that first natural impulse before the stories come in, before the doubt comes in, before the ideas come in. And it's also there when we're just out in the world, seeing it. Last night, as we were walking back, so many of us stopped on the way so many times just to look at the stars. So just those moments when we can just stop however many times we want and look at the stars and just take in that magic, that mystery of the stars shining. And they shine every night, even when we're in a city and we can't see them, they're there. Or when the moon is there. So this cave of meditation or awakened heart, this bodhicitta, has incredible power when we can contact it, when we can bring it in to our hearts. And one thing that it does is it really helps us be shaken out of our self-absorbed normal state, self-centered. It just does that by when we bring it into our awareness. It helps us disengage from many of our habits. When I was reflecting on this, I was thinking of great souls that we've all heard of, who are kind of a living example of this quality. People like Gandhi, who, in order to stop violence, would just say, okay, I'm going on a hunger strike. I'm going to stop eating. until the violence ends. And so to have this energy to that degree, when even that basic care for our own body is not as important as the care for the whole. Or Baba Amte himself, who even when he was old and sick would go on hunger strikes when the money that was supposed to come in from the Maharashtra government wasn't coming in. And he would say, if there's no money to feed my people, I will stop eating. And again, usually it worked in his case. I don't know if we could all do that, but who knows. And the other incredible power of bodhicitta is that it reminds us that everything that comes up in our experience is worth giving our attention to, is part of our journey and our work. Nothing is outside of that. It's all grist for the mill. That's one of my favorite Dharma book titles. I'm not sure Nathan mentioned it yesterday. Grist for the mill. It's all mud that we can make houses out of, that we can build on. It's all stuff that's workable, that's useful. It can all nourish our growth, and through our own growth, help us relieve the suffering of all of life, not just ourselves. I heard a story recently about an American man who committed a crime for which he was sentenced to death. And while spending years on death row, started practicing Dharma, specifically Tibetan practices. And he took a vow of non-harming. The story is that his Tibetan Lama came to the prison to give him the vow, to give him this practice. And they were doing it, you know, in that situation where a visitor and a prisoner are together with a glass window in between them and the phones to talk to each other. And in that way, he was given this transmission by his Lama. And he took this vow so seriously, to do what he could to alleviate suffering, to stop harm. And so he did, he put all his energy into this. And at one point in the prison, there was a situation where the prisoners got very angry with some of the guards. And they got really angry, they felt very oppressed. They felt there was a lot of injustice in the way the guards were treating them. And so they planned to kill them. And they had this whole plan how to kill some of the guards. And he heard about it and felt like, okay, I've got to try and stop this, but how do I do this? How do I stop this unnecessary violence? So he came up with an alternative plan to get back at the guards. And he convinced all the other prisoners that if they wanted to get back at the guards, they didn't actually need to kill them. They could also do something that would just make them work late one day. Mess up their order. So he came up with a plan how to flood the whole floor. And he managed to convince the other prisoners to do that, and they actually did that. So he was kind of the gang leader in this plan. He took on this role of being the gang leader, and they flooded and they made chaos. And the guards had to stay late. But he prevented the killing. So he was willing to do what he needed to do. And the story also brings up another element for me of how much when we experience difficulty, how much we go for this all or nothing kind of mentality. We forget that there's options in between. So if I have someone who's really challenging in my life, if I'm really honest, if I look at my inner response to them sometimes, there isn't, I think even if I'm really honest, there isn't the wish to kill them. But there's often that real sense of I wish they just didn't exist in my life, that they just weren't there. Which is also when I really feel it and look at it. Very, very aggressive. And so I forget, me and the prisoners in this prison, that it doesn't have to be that totality that take someone's life. There's other options, there's other possibilities. But this meditation cave, this inner space, this awakened heart, doesn't need extreme circumstances like being on death row in order to be applicable for us. It's relevant, it's there all the time. In our everyday, moment-by-moment reality. In the smallest things. When we encounter dissatisfaction, imperfection, pain, boredom, confusion, whatever it is that bothers us. We have the possibility to look at our relationship to it. And see if it's possible to shift. See if it's possible not to push away, but actually to connect to our experience, to connect to what's going on. To connect to the feeling, to the experience, and then to use the energy within it. Because in every experience we have, there is energy. There's something useful, usable. And one very beautiful aspect of this bodhicitta aspiration is that we can use our own experiences to connect to the experiences of others. So when I'm feeling too hot or a little bit sick or bored or fed up with dal and rice, whatever it is, I can use that experience to connect to all other beings that know that experience as well. It's not just my experience. It's a human experience. And it can be the difference between pushing something away, which contracts me, and opening up to the experience, which helps me expand. It can become a taste of the sky of interconnectedness. A taste of the sky of interconnectedness, of what we share with each other. And it's always available. I've probably said that about 5 times already. But maybe if I had to pick one sentence, that would be the one. It's always available. Which sometimes is really annoying, that it's always available. Another one of my favorite Dharma book titles is The Wisdom of No Escape. The fact that sometimes there's just no escape from this wisdom, even though I really wish there was. I really, really wish there was. And this aspiration, this quality is particularly useful when we meet our edges, when we're at our edges, at the edges of what is our individual comfort zone. And so for me, a place where I meet these edges quite regularly is just around the corner when we go to Anandohan from here. I've been working there for many years with the old women in the old people's home. And it's a place where I meet my edges on a regular basis. And one such situation was last year, when we arrived and I couldn't see one of the women that I was quite close to around. And I kind of assumed that she'd passed away during the 11 months that I'd been away. And after a few days, I realized that she was still there. She was in a bed in the corner. She had broken her hip, had some surgery and hadn't really recovered. And so she had gone from being a very vital, able, looked after person to someone who was lying in a bed, a low bed in the corner, not able to really move around herself, and so relying on others to bring her food and to help her go to the toilet and change her clothes. And when I realized she was still there, I stood in the doorway to the room and I was looking at her. She seemed to be sleeping all the time. And I found it so hard to go over. And so I stood in the doorway and looked at her from a distance of probably about 3 meters and saw, you know, the flies and the hair that had always been really looked after, kind of in a mess, and knew that if I got closer, there'd probably be some smell of urine. And so this standing on the threshold, standing in the doorway at my edge, at our edge, that's what this practice is about. If that's all that is possible, is coming to that doorway, coming to that edge, and staying there. Not running away, not turning around, not giving in to the voices that are telling me I'm a bad person and I should be doing something else than I'm doing, but staying steady. Until there's a readiness to take a step into the room. And another step, and another step. And one day, I had taken quite a few steps in and I was very close to her bed. And I was speaking to one of the other women in the room. And suddenly, I heard her call my name. So she had heard my voice. She wasn't sleeping as deeply as I thought. And she had heard my voice. And she called my name. And she reached her hand up towards me. And all she wanted for me was to reach out and hold her hand. So that's what we did from then on. And so this story for me is really about this process of staying steady at our edge, whatever the edge is. And then when there's readiness, taking the next step and taking the next step. And very often it's not us that need to walk all the way. A voice calls, a hand is reached to us. And what is asked of us is not what, in this case, was not what I thought. She didn't need me to bathe her, she didn't want me to change her whole situation. She just wanted me to hold her hand and be there with her, which I could do. And so, just this process, also with ourselves, with the parts in ourselves that are hidden in the corner, that are unwanted or disrespected. Just staying steady, giving time, giving presence, doing the best I can in a situation, and not letting the voices that are telling me I'm not good enough dominate. And it feels like every time we meet our edges in this way, we connect to this heart within us that wants to heal and hold and care for all of life, And we let ourselves walk at the pace that is possible for us. Every time we do that, we contribute to a momentum that strengthens ourselves and strengthens the good everywhere. We're taking a stand for the good, for the kind, for the caring, for the compassionate. And again, in the teachings, it's referred to as aspiration bodhicitta and active bodhicitta, and how they connect to each other, part of a continuum. Not giving up or putting myself down because I can't be active in the way that I know is possible, because I can't be Gandhi or Baba Amte. By the way, this is probably the thing I loved most about Baba Amte, was that he was one of the most amazing beings I've ever met. And what was most amazing about him was that you never walked away with a sense of the gap between me and him. But he embodied each of our potentials. And that was the feeling from him. This is our potential. So we need clear seeing and honesty and calmness. We need the ability to stay steady. Such an important aspect of our lives, which is so overlooked. Staying steady. And in Dharma language, it's often called calm abiding, which I also love that phrase. The ability to stay without being moved away from. So the ability to stay steady with our own imperfections and the imperfections in the world around us, the suffering that is everywhere. And we need patience and gentleness and humor. As Nathan said yesterday, not to take things too serious. Most of all, ourselves. And we need to remember that the way we treat ourselves, the way we work with ourselves, is the way we treat others, is the way we work with others. It's one and the same. There's no separation. And the willingness to just take one step at a time and to begin again and again and again, as many times as is needed. Nathan was telling us a quote yesterday from the guru of our friend Prabhu, who said to him that you can chant mantras, you can meditate, you can go on pilgrimages, but as long as your ego is in control, you won't be free. And there's another part to that, which we weren't told yesterday, which is, he said that the most powerful thing that can help us de-ego ourselves is love. Is love. Let's have some quiet minutes together to end.